Episode of the Pandorica Opens, the Doctor Who discussion show in which myself and my good friend Raisa cover the most recent happenings in the current series of Doctor Who. And this week's episodes that we're covering are The Girl Who Died and The Woman Who Lived, which was part of the two-part story. And also, if there's time left over, we're going to do a quick reissue of our previous show, which got lost in the ether due to technical problems. But first off, let's talk about the recent two-parter that's just finished airing. It started off in Viking times. And the central character and central plot thread was Isildur, the girl who died, who's played by Maisie Williams.
And you could kind of tell that they watched Game of Thrones because they wrote to what they knew were her strengths in both episodes. It was a role that, frankly, in terms of known younger actors, only Maisie Williams could have played properly.
Yeah, it was actually really, really well done. I think the first part was a lot stronger than the second in certain ways. I think there was a little bit more humour to the first part. The second one seemed to be the woman who died seemed to get a little bit bogged down in the I'm so lonely sort of like reality of being a model.
Yeah, it's hard because on the one hand, those themes do need to be explored, but it did seem to be sort of heavy-handed. On the other hand, I think part of the reason it was heavy-handed was because they knew they were dealing with a certain segment of the audience that was under 12, who had probably never been exposed to those themes before on that level, and so they had to just sort of make it obvious, whereas those of us who are a little bit older and have seen things like Highlander have been down this road before. So it felt a little redundant. I mean, it's interesting because in terms of Doctor Who, we've never had an immortal who went about it the long way. I mean, even Captain Jack is sort of a hybrid in that he lived both the long way and he had his time travel mechanism. But Isildur is the first one to actually just live day to day along the lines of the Highlander immortals. And I liked the fact that they brought up in the second episode the fact that if you're a human and you become immortal, you end up with the equivalent of immortal, you know, Alzheimer's, because your brain just can't contain that many memories. It's not designed. It doesn't have, you know, in computer terms, it just doesn't have that much RAM. And that was a very interesting concept for Doctor Who, although, again, if Highlander fans, we've seen some of that stuff with Mythos. But it was very very cool of them to tackle it in terms of Doctor Who and to make it so, you know, immediately visual with all of her journals and stuff.
Yeah, and that was it. She kind of kept records, but she sort of like the memories that were actually too painful for her to sort of like bear and want to hold on to, she kind of got rid of.
Yeah.
Which I thought that was actually pretty good, too.
Yeah.
And guess what? My picture's gone again.
Oh, wonderful.
Why does it always happen when we're live? But we're going to carry on.
Yes.
Until we'll just carry on till Blog Talk kicks us off, because I can't be dealing with this. But Yeah, it was a very well thought out thing, and I like the journals. I like the fact that she battled at Agincourt.
Oh, that was lovely.
You know,
I like the fact that she became a medieval queen and had to fake her own death. She discovered it was too bureaucratic for her taste and had to just mm-hmm. basically fake her own death.
Yep. Yeah, I liked all that. But I also liked the way, you know, the way it was sort of like, they did the episode where it was just basically totally really a two-hander between her and the Doctor.
Yes, I appreciated the fact that Clara wasn't there, because Clara, for all she understands the Doctor, she only understands him up to a point. All of the companions really only understand him up to a point. And it was a conversation that only the two of them could actually have.
Mm-hmm.
And Clara would have just gotten in the way. I did appreciate the fact that Jack Harkness got a name check, finally.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. And technical problem sorted.
Good.
I enjoyed that a great deal. And I kind of hope it's sort of like it's going to give us a chance to sort of like see Captain Jack come back at some point in the future. You know, at least while John Barrowman still looks young enough to actually play the role.
Yes, although when they sort of kind of maybe revealed that he was the face of Bo, he did mention that he was starting to age. So they could just say that the immortality doesn't cover aging, that he's like to fullness on that level.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all right either way. I would just like to see him, you know, at some point, because it feels like they wrote him off over there, and they really shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm. But you know, back to the episode. What did you make of Rufus Hound?
If you like that kind of humor, he was awesome. If you don't, you know, you kind of have to tolerate it. I've seen reviews that have said he was great, and others that, you know, just really wished they had toned it down. I can kind of see both arguments.
I thought it was all right. I mean, I'm not really into that humour as such, per se. But I think he was actually needed. I think something like that was actually needed, and a little bit more of something like that was actually needed in the second episode. Because as we've already said, it kind of got a bit bogged down in the whole sort of like loneliness of immortality, sort of like a subplot running throughout.
It did, and it's the point where the under 12s would have just found the whole thing too esoteric and boring. There had to be a hook for them to grab onto as well.
I think that's why it was on at about 8:20 in the evening. I think they were trying to hook the over 12s with it, but you know, I think even many over 12s would have found it a bit too esoteric and boring.
Well, the thing for me is I actually collect immortals. I love them as narrative devices. So every time you get an immortal who actually talks about what it is to be immortal, whatever that means in the context of a specific story that's being told at any given time, that's my narrative sweet spot. So I kind of really just appreciated the episode on that level, because they were talking to me and to viewers like me who collect those kinds of stories.
Mm-hmm.
But I could understand why others would look at it and just think this is a thesis novel right now, because it was very heavy-handed.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I like the character, and you know, I like the fact that the Doctor was, you know, although he actually found her by accident on this occasion, I like the fact that he sort of like he intervened. He tried to sort of like you know, put her back in touch with her true self, because she sort of like started going a little bit dark. But here's some good news for you. Apparently, Maisie Williams is actually going to be returning for another stint in episode 10, but she's not the new companion. That song I kind of reiterated, more or less in quotation marks.
But she can't be, even if she wants to be, because she's committed to Thrones for at least a couple more years. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess I came her off. But basically, writer Sarah Donard confirms the Game of Thrones star's return. It says here, Maisie Williams will return return for a third appearance in Doctor Who Series 9. Writer Sarah Dongard has confirmed that the Game of Thrones star will appear in Dongard's episode, Face for Raven. Face for Raven is the 10th episode of Series 9. It will also feature the return of graffiti artist Riggsy and will be directed by Justin Molitinoff. Dongard commented on her
Hello?
Wow.
Hello.
Hello, did you lose me then?
Yes, I did.
Okay, well, so like Blog Talk automatically, you know, called us back in. Basically, the episode's called Face of the Raven, and Dongard has commented on her Twitter that William's return has been really difficult to not tell everyone. She was speaking at the MCM London Comic Con earlier as part of a panel with Stephen Moffat, Mark Gatiss and Rachel Talalay, who will be directing the Series 9 double bill finale. Moffat has insisted, though, that Williams is not the new companion. In the show, Williams plays Viking girl Ashilda, and viewers saw her make her second appearance on last night's episode of The Woman Who Lived. Her character was made immortal in The Girl Who Died. Earlier in the week, Williams had hinted at a return for her character later in the series. I'm hoping she comes back, she said. Everyone's asking if she comes back. I hope so, but I have no idea. I know they've had characters similar to Ashilda, but that have returned in future episodes and series, so we'll see. I think there's a good chance. So there we go.
Yeah, I was one of the fan theories I read was that structurally one of the reasons she's there is to build up to Clara's departure, which is interesting if true, especially when you consider that Jenna Coleman had worked on the departure with Stephen Moffat for a year and a half ago, and they had apparently worked out the broad strokes. So if the broad strokes inspired him to create a shoulder, that's a very interesting commentary if it proves to be true.
Yeah, and it's also, if you think about it, Ashilda makes a nice sort of like counterpoint to Jenna's whole arc.
Yes.
In so many ways. So, you know, in a way that kind of makes sense.
Yes, it certainly makes
more sense than one of the fan theories that I was reading about before the episode ever even aired. And this must have been one that I picked up on it today, but I think it must have been posted about, you know, six to eight months ago, before you know, things got out. But apparently one theory was that Maisie Williams' character was going to turn out to be Susan, the Doctor's granddaughter.
On a certain level, like that would have been interesting. I'm sorry we won't see that. I hope we do get to see Susan in some capacity sometime, or whatever that means. But this is interesting, especially considering that we're going to be getting River Song in the Christmas special. And you've already got Captain Jack, and you had Rose, and you had Donna, and you had Clara, and you basically have this subset of characters who were just, you know, not just the impossible girl, but the impossible people, who were just, you know, weird, not just affected by their time with the Doctor, but weirdly affected by their time with the Doctor, in permanently life-altering ways. So that's I'm kind of hoping we get some commentary in a general way on this subset of characters, because Moffat and Davies both have a penchant for them, and they can come off as fanficky if they're not carefully written, but they seem to be doing a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was quite nice watching see in the episodes prior to this, the flashback that the Doctor has to his time with Donna when he realizes why he's got the face he's got.
That's actually one of my favorite scenes in that entire two-parter. I know some of your viewers were thinking it was very trite, but I actually appreciated it. Because
I actually thought it was much better than the opening episode of Peter Capaldi when Jenna rings the 11th Doctor. I thought that was incredibly tacky and obvious and kind of insulting. And yet, many, many people in fandom and the media absolutely loved that. They ate it up. I just felt it was just very, very insulting to
Yeah,
want
I think
to just.
part of the problem is that modern Who, and in fact modern television in general, and this is a systemic issue I'm finding, and maybe part of it is age, is that modern television in general is sort of morphing into the fanfic version of itself in order to meet the expectations of that audience. I realize that that's a generalization, but it's a generalization that's kind of true. And that's a double-edged sword, depending on how much of that kind of storytelling you prefer.
Yeah, I mean it's but with a shoulder we've got a wonderful character. Has so much potential and I was kind of like I'm kind of wondering if she'll break bad
Yeah,
because
I'm also wondering. I'm sorry.
the doctor's intervened here and he's kind of like prevented it, but I think what we've kind of got to ask ourselves is it kind of inevitable? The doctor made her immortal, and yet, when she literally begs him to travel with him, so she doesn't have to deal with the loneliness of it all, he sort of like he turns her down repeatedly.
And while I understand his rationale and it's logical, it doesn't do her much good. And the other thing, though, I'm thinking of is that in the previous episodes, I think we can talk about them briefly in context here. One of the base people who went with the doctor in the second part into the past, the one who was the fangirl, was reeling off of, various things on his record, and she mentioned something that she said, "Oh no, that's the future," and it was the war minister. And one of the fan theories is that Isildur becomes the war minister.
That's kind of interesting because she is very much a child of war. It's got to be kind of inevitable. I think that'd actually work,
It would. It
to be
would.
honest.
What's interesting too is that he refers to her when he realizes in the first part of the Viking episode what he's done, and he says that she's got a little bit of alien in her. She's become a hybrid, and he stops for a moment, and he realizes that she kind of fulfills the terms of that prophecy that we didn't think was going anywhere that Davros mentioned in the episode before.
Well, in the first couple of episodes, yeah. Talking about the series overall thus far, I've got to say, it's been a much, much stronger series than we had last year. It seems to narratively be more, a lot more stronger than it was last year.
Yes, I think part of that is that the new doctor, almost always the doctor's second season is better than his first. They get their feet under them.
Yeah,
If I have one, if I have one complaint, it's that, as with season 8, whatever's going on with Clara's impossible girl arc seems to be obliquely handled or indirectly handled.
Mm-hmm. And thus far this series, it's kind of been it's been referred to a few times.
Yes.
They've not really sort of like pulled the rug from under us yet with any big reveals about what happened and why she survived. It's kind of strange, and you know, I thought a bit where, you know, where Missy tried to sort of like have her killed inside of a Dalek. You know, when Missy tried to sort of like get the Doctor kill her in Dalek form at the end of the first serial was kind of like a fun throwback.
Yes, that was good. It was good.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's I think it's been pretty strong so far, and I'm kind of trying to remember the previous story to Maisie Williams' return here, Maisie Williams in the show.
That was the one with the Fisher King and Under the Lake before the flood.
Yeah, it was Under the Lake and Before the Flood, yeah.
Yeah. With the deaf based captain played by a deaf actress, which I really appreciated.
That's the one, yeah. The one thing that I kind of thought they had fun with there was the way in which they brought the Doctor back at the end.
Yes, you know, time loops are our friend.
Yeah, but time loops are our friend as fans, but as non-fans, my sister just didn't get it. She didn't understand how he managed to escape and come back from, you know, from pretty much being left for dead. She just didn't understand it. I tried to explain it to her, but she didn't get it.
It is a headache. It is,
but you know, I guess you have to have a pretty basic rudimentary knowledge of physics and string theory in order to actually get it, I guess.
Have a good enough basis in time travel stories generally that you just sort of take it for granted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably. My niece didn't quite get it either, but she liked the episode. She thought it was quite scary, so. And she likes the relationship between Clara and the Doctor as well, which is kind of funny because I look on my Facebook every day at various people that I know in who fandom that are all fans of classic series and kind of like the new series to a point. And all of them are complaining about Clara. As if to say, when can we get rid of this irritating woman?
She can come off as the new series Perry from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
There is a nagginess about her. Again, part of that I think is that they're writing her as the fanfic. They're mm-hmm. confused as to what makes a strong female character. And the character traits that they've gone with are not always ones that all the viewers equate with him being a strong female character.
Exactly, but you know, there's a lot of people that are watching that finding her to be quite a drag in so many ways, and finding her to be, you know, I just can't wait for this self-serving young woman to just die.
There is a fine line between knowing your self-worth and being a bit of an egomaniac, and she crosses that line. She got along a little too well with Missy, despite the fact that she is responsible for Danny's death. And I'm wondering if one of the reasons they're introducing a Shilder is to have a compare-contrast there when Clara goes too far and is not as humane as the doctor needs her to be as the example of humane behavior for contrast for his purposes.
That's actually an interesting and very very well thought out theory, I think. And you know, there's probably something in that. But there's also a certain degree of irony in it because a shield is kind of like part alien.
Yes.
Whereas, so like the Impossible Girl, as is basically little more than a fragment.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
In time and space, sort of thing, and you know, I think kind of got to think that you know it's kind of like cloning. But you know, when you clone, the theory is when you clone human beings, not that it's actually being done, as far as we know.
Yes.
But after you've cloned so many, there's a certain amount of degradation in the clone. You know, the DNA and stuff doesn't quite hold together as well. So you know, perhaps when you're split throughout time and space in several different fragments, you kind of lose a degree of your humanity.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. And then to have that reinforced one, that the splinter of you that's left has traveled with the doctor too long. I mean, there's a real thesis on identity in here somewhere, and I'm wondering if the characters, all of the characters who factor into that thesis will ever actually get a conversation where they can just hash it out and compare notes.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems like there's a lot of common ground from running through both eras, the Russell T. Davies era and the Moth era.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of threads, you know, for compare contrast, and I would love it if the characters involved could actually just have their say, because there's a lot that could be said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of wondering, you know, once Clara does leave. We know that a shield is not going to be the next companion because it's literally impossible for that to happen because of Maisie's Game of Thrones commitments.
Yes.
Unless
if it doesn't happen afterwards, yeah.
Yeah, unless she's killed off, because let's get things straight here. The Game of Thrones that's returning next year is not taken from the books. It's going to be entirely original. So anything can happen in that regard.
There is no original. They're in consultation with the author, but the author would actually surpass the author in terms of the source material available. So from this point on, the show is operating in conjunction with the author, but with no actual published source material at this time.
Yeah. You know, it's a bit like when Ned Stark died, no one was really surprised. You know, if they'd read the novel, they would have known he died at that point.
Yes.
Same with Robb Stark.
Yes. Everything through book five, they would have known. From this point on, it's anybody's guess. So
you never know what's going to happen. I mean, but I can't see it myself. You know, but it'll be interesting to see what they do with Companion. You know, I think we can maybe spend the last quarter of an hour or so on this subject. But, you know, it seems to me that all his companions so far have been from Earth at present day.
Mm.
And I'd love to see him hook up with a companion from Earth's past or Earth's future.
Or
even an alien planet or something else, because that's something that hasn't happened in Doctor Who since the classic run, and I think it's something that needs to happen again.
Yeah, me too. My two favorite companions are Nyssa from the classic series, and my favorite Big Finish specific companion is one you may not be familiar with, but I've been collecting the audios centered around her, Aramem. She's fascinating. Aramem is a uncrowned female Egyptian pharaoh.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff, her arc starts in ancient Egypt, and she has an entire arc that plays out over the equivalent of one Big Finish season, basically. And she travels with the Fifth Doctor and Perry for a time. And her arc ends with her becoming the Queen of Peladon.
Cool.
Yes. And it's quite wonderful. She's actually my favorite Big Finish companion. And everything about her arc basically prepares her to become the Queen of Peladon. And we have a storyline where she helps investigate what happened to the princes in the tower. We have a storyline where she almost marries historical Dracula, played by James Purfoy. A lot of really interesting stuff. A lot of straight-up historicals. And I would love for Aramem or someone very like her to be the companion, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping it does happen, though, because they've hinted at it. You know, like in Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, we had Cleopatra.
Yes, which, no, Nefertiti.
Oh, yeah. Nefertiti, sorry. Yeah. We had that, and, I mean, obviously, we don't want him traveling around with Nefertiti, because that's all like going to change history as we know it.
Yes.
But maybe someone from that era.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Yeah.
So like, it's just to me, I'm kind of burning out on these present day companions, because they're all basically the same.
Yes, they're all these modern dream pixies who are not only important to the Doctor but important to the universe. They're literally all fanfic.
Yeah. They're
well written fanfic.
And they literally all, at some point or another, in some form or other, fall in love with the Doctor.
Yes.
You know,
that's got to stop.
And that's definitely got to stop. You know, maybe the answer is to have the Doctor travel with a male companion only for a while.
Yeah, but then they run the risk of them placating the gay audience. We could still end up with the same problem.
True. Yeah, I suppose that is true, but they've already placated the gay audience, haven't they, with Captain Jack and...
Captain Jack, good point.
And stuff like that, and not to a point. I say they're one and truly placated with that.
That's true.
You know? Because look at how Torchwood went when they started that.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You know, and then the introduction of Captain John. You know, who kind of likes doodles. But it's sort of like, I just really think it's time that they think about, you know, ditching the fanfic and going with, you know, taking a few risks with the series now. You know, it seems to me, companion-wise, they've been playing it safe.
They have. And considering that the BBC could go belly up, what have they got to lose?
The BBC is not going to go belly up. It's pretty bad, but it's not. I don't think it's that bad, to be honest. You know, so like, there's not a public outcry here in the UK at what's happening with the BBC. And basically what it boils down to is the greedy right-wing nutbag known as Rupert Murdoch wanting to get his grasping hands on it and pretty much take it over or wipe it off the face of the earth completely.
Oh.
You know, it's just one of those. And it just so happens at the moment we've got a Conservative government in power who, you know, share the same agenda. They've got no love for the BBC because they actually view the BBC as politically biased to the left, which is absolute nonsense. You know, it certainly is now. Back in the 80s, maybe it was biased to the left, but it's absolute nonsense now. But, you know, this is where the conversation goes into politics, which is, I don't really want to go there.
No. But, suffice to say, it's pretty much the same here in the US. We've got our own version of this.
Yeah, but you don't have the BBC. You don't pay a TV license for the BBC and stuff like that, and whereas we do. Basically, here in the UK, everyone that owns a TV has to pay a TV license, which covers the cost of the BBC, and television is one as radio and all the internet stuff. If you own a television set in this country, you've got to pay that.
Mm.
You know, if you don't pay that, they can, you know, they can take legal action against you.
Oh dear.
You know, so you know, whereas you don't have that in the States, I don't think, in any way, shape or form. I mean, you have PBS,
no.
which is public broadcasting, but I don't think, you know.
But
you know,
back to the companions. I was thinking about that new spinoff that was coming out called Fast, I think it is. And Ness, the writer of it, mentioned that Clara will not be appearing. Which
I picked up on that a few weeks back. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw it, and I was going to mention it before our technical difficulties the last go around, but which is weird because if Clara is not appearing, and Danny is very specifically dead, and the whole arc of season 8 was that he's dead, and they're probably realistically not going to be bringing in Ian, even though they should, because they've got his name on the sign out front. I don't know how they're connect this to Doctor Who.
I don't know. I mean, so the thing is, with Sarah Jane Adventures, it was easy because your main character was connected to Doctor Who.
Yes.
You had a history. Whereas the only thing that's got a history with Doctor Who in this case is the school, which was seen very, very briefly in the very, very first episode way back in 63. And I think it was seen again. Was it Cole Hill that Anthony Head was at?
No, that was a different school, but Cole Hill was seen again in the classic series in that awesome Dalek episode you love where Ace takes a baseball bat to the Dalek when they travel back in time to the 60s.
Yeah,
they go
Written by none other than Ben Aronovich, who I'm going to try and get on here at some point, I think. I remember Cole Hill being in that, and obviously it's just been bought in for Clara's benefit in this series, kind of in conjunction with 50th anniversary. I don't know, maybe they want to have it separate from the Doctor Who universe for a while and just feature the school and some students and some supernatural goings on, and then perhaps at some point have the Doctor, you know, make a guest appearance, you know, once they've established it.
Yeah, but if they do that, it can't be as racy as Torchwood was, because the Doctor could never appear on Torchwood.
Well, it's not. I don't think it's going to be racy, though. It's YA fiction, isn't it? It's for teens.
Oh, that's true.
You know, it's not.
Yeah.
Whereas Torchwood was Torchwood set out to be an adult show, right from the very beginning. Whereas with YA, it's probably going to be more along lines of something like Buffy. You know,
then that could work.
Yeah, that'll work. But it's sort of like it'll be interesting to see what they do with it. Anyway, do you have anything else on the series? Or?
No, I think we've about covered it.
I'm looking forward
to next week, though.
I think we pretty much covered it, too. I'm looking forward to next week, which will be the Zygon episodes.
Yes.
With the return
of
the
Zygon invasion.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what happens there, because we've got the return of the Brigadier's daughter, and also the return of Oswin. Was it Oswin?
Yes, Osgood.
Yeah, Osgood. Sorry, you know, return of Osgood. But that's it for now. We'll be back at you in about 2 weeks' time with our look back at the Zygon two-parter. So as always, thanks for joining us. We apologise for any technical difficulties that have happened in the show, such as Raisa kind of panicking when I got cut off. I mean, I don't know whether he panicked or said anything. So,
no.
and my screen blacking out at least twice during the hour. Because my screensaver was playing up, basically.
Yes.
We'll be back at you in 2 weeks' time. Please keep listening to the shows. We'll be back before then. We've got a Halloween episode coming up this Friday with my friend Tishon Hardy and his wife, Linda, where we'll be talking about the top 10 favourite horror heroes and villains. So you're probably going to have about 30 different horror heroes and villains mentioned in the space of an hour or so. Because it's actually quite a long episode. And we're also drinking cocktails called Crazy Clowns. Because we was in a Pennywise frame of mind, and you know, so the humour and the show and the course of the show is, you know, a lot of information, a lot of fun stuff, but we're slowly deteriorating over the period of the 2 hours.
Oh God!
So it's probably gonna be fun to listen to. For those that are into that sort of thing. But as always, thanks a lot for joining us. We'll be back at you real soon. Bye.